Did you miss your deadline to renew your Medicaid coverage? You can still send your completed annual review form to Healthy Connections Medicaid. You may be assigned to another health plan, but you can ask to come back to First Choice within 60 days of renewed Medicaid eligibility. It's your family. It's your choice. First Choice is the right choice. Renew and choose us. Visit selecthealthofsc.com/renew to learn more.
Between aging and busy lifestyles, many women struggle with maintaining their physical and mental wellness. At AquaVita Concierge Healthcare Services for Women, we can help you revitalize your health and reclaim your life. We start from within by balancing your hormones, allowing your body to achieve and maintain desired weight goals. We also specialize in peptide therapies, regenerative medicine, sexual health, and aesthetics in our state-of-the-art facilities. Feel better, look better, live better. At AquaVita, visit aquavitality.com and begin your journey today.
What's happening, everybody? Greg Ehrenberg here from Stochastic.com. We're about to break down UFC 292. Going to be going over a few things here in this video. Going to be talking about my favorite DFS plays, my favorite Rainmakers plays over on DraftKings. Also, a couple of bets along the way. And before I build out my Rainmakers lineups, I've got a couple packs sitting in my inventory. So we'll open up a pack or two as well before we go and build some lineups. So as you guys come in, do me a favor, like the video, subscribe to the YouTube channel, because it's only going to take you a second, 2 seconds to do. It helps keep our content free, and I appreciate it a whole bunch if you could do that. Thank you. And then also, if you guys want to sign up for DraftKings Rainmakers, who sponsor this show, they have a totally free PGA starters pack that you could get by clicking on the link below. So let's start breaking down this slate, and it's one that I'm really excited about. Of course, starting with the main event, Aljamain Sterling, Sean O'Malley, and it's funny because I'm really excited for this fight in general because I like Aljo. I like Sean O'Malley, and maybe it's somewhat controversial to say you like Aljamain Sterling because it seems the public does not really like Aljo. Public generally does really like Sean O'Malley. Even though I'm excited for this fight, though, I don't expect it to be competitive because, to me, the only path to victory for Sean O'Malley is a quick knockout in like the first or second round. And if that doesn't happen, I think that Aljo just dominates him on the ground in this fight. So we see Aljamain Sterling, who is landing 2.02 takedowns per 15 minutes, but a very smart fighter, keeps to a really good game plan. And we have seen that even if his first takedown fails, even if his second takedown fails, hell, even if his fifth takedown fails, he is going to keep on the takedowns until he gets what he needs on the ground from his opponents, which, by the way, I mean just taking his opponents down. And that's what we saw, for instance, in some of his fights against Peter Yan, where Aljamain Sterling, let's pull up the Yan fight. So the Yan rematch, Sterling was 2 of 22 on takedown attempts, ultimately ended up holding 8.5 minutes of control time in that fight. So even if we don't see Sterling, like I said, land the first or second takedown against Sean O'Malley, he's not going to give up. And I think he's too smart to try to stay at range with Sean O'Malley. And then we have to look at how realistic is it for Sean O'Malley to defend takedowns in this matchup? Well, O'Malley only defends takedowns historically at a 60% clip, and he's also not typically fought the best wrestlers. So if we look at the last fight that he had against Peter Yan, which was a controversial win for Sean O'Malley, I didn't think it was a robbery, which a lot of people seemed to think it was after the fight. I thought you could make a case for O'Malley. With that said, I did think that Yan won the fight 29-28. But here's what I think we could take away from that fight that's going to inform what's going to happen in this fight. Yan landed 6 of 13 takedown attempts and was able to hold 5 minutes and 44 seconds of control time in a 3-round fight. If Peter Yan is able to control Sean O'Malley that much, I mean, we've already seen Sterling out-wrestle and out-grapple Yan before. Like, I think he could really have his way with O'Malley in this fight. And I do think we're going to see at some point Sterling gets this fight to the ground, is able to submit Sean O'Malley. I'm going to say a second round submission is the pick here for Aljamain Sterling. And as far as DraftKings purposes go, he's my favorite play overall for Rainmakers and for classic contests. He's going to be really popular, Sterling, but so is Sean O'Malley on the other side. The most popular player overall on the slate, according to these stochastic ownership projections, which if you guys want to sign up for any package that we have over at the site, there's a link below in the description box. And when you sign up using that link, you're going to get 50% off. So if you want to sign up for an MMA package, 50% off. If you want to sign up for a Stochastic Platinum package, which includes projections, ownership projections for every single DFS sport, there's also a link for that below that is going to get you 50% off. Now, Sterling, is projected for 50% ownership on this slate. Most popular fighter on the entire slate, but Sean O'Malley's projected for 30% ownership, the most popular underdog on the entire slate. So I'm going to be very heavily exposed to Sterling. Like I said, my favorite fighter on the entire card for fantasy purposes. I don't want to entirely write off the chance that O'Malley could knock him out in the first or second round. So I'm thinking my ownership's probably going to be something like 90% Sterling to 10% Sean O'Malley. If you guys are playing five lineups, one lineup, three lineups, I would just play Sterling in all of them. But if you're going to be like playing 150 max, that's where I'm going to be like 90% Sterling to 10% Sean O'Malley. But still, pick here is Aljamain Sterling for me and my most exposed fighter on the entire card. The co-main event, another title fight, Zhang Weili against Amanda Lemos. And kind of a weird fight from this standpoint. I don't think Lemos is all that good. You know, relative to other championship level fighters, actually. I mean, not that I'm saying that like she's overall like not worthy of being a title contender or anything like that, but she's a very good finisher. So there is a path to victory for her, kind of like the Sean O'Malley, where she lands a first, second round knockout, and that is her path to victory. Very same as Sean O'Malley. With that said, I think Lemos is a little bit more live for the knockout than Sean O'Malley. So all things being considered, in terms of like the odds of the fight and then also the projected ownership here, where Sean O'Malley is 30% owned and then Lemos is only projected for 20% ownership. If I'm looking to take a punt play on one of the title fights, I'm more apt to go to Amanda Lemos than I am to Sean O'Malley. Now, with that said, I fully expect Zhang Weili to win this fight. She is my pick to win. And if you look at just the overall output for Zhang Weili, it's just higher than Amanda Lemos. She lands 5.79 significant strikes per minute to 4.51 for Lemos. And then also, if somebody's landing takedowns in this fight, I expect it to be Zhang Weili. I do not expect it to be Amanda Lemos. Another factor of this fight that we should consider, Lemos does not have the best cardio in the world. And also, a lot of her output stats, like you might look at, like, oh, 4.51 significant strikes per minute, that's not low, but if we look at her recent fights where she has fought some better competition, her output has been extremely low. What brings her numbers up are some of the output that she had against really low-level competition. You know, Montserrat Ruiz, who still looked terrible last week. Lemos finishes her in 35 seconds, lands 7 significant strikes. So stuff like that brings up her average. She lands 29 significant strikes against Livania Souza in a first-round finish. So some of those fights, yeah, she had high output. But you look at her recent fights, she knocks out Marina Rodriguez in the third round in her last fight, only lands 29 significant strikes before that. She fights against Michelle Waterson, who I definitely think is on the tail end of her career. Waterson probably won the first round, then Lemos gets a finish in the second round, but she only lands 20 significant strikes at that point. And then another thing, too, is you look at her fight against Jessica Andrade. Andrade was able to push her up against the octagon and then got a standing head and arm choke. So if you look at the recent, you know, performances for Jessica Andrade, if Andrade sat out after beating Lemos, Andrade might be fighting for the title right now. And you have to consider how, like I said, how Andrade has looked in her recent fights where, you know, last time out, she gets starched by Tatiana Suarez. Well, I shouldn't say starched by Tatiana Suarez, but gets finished in the second round. She did get starched against Yan Xiaonan. She got starched against Erin Blanchfield. Very, very high-level competition. But still, Andrade discarded of Amanda Lemos pretty easily. So I think that is a little bit telling when we look at the current quality of Amanda Lemos against Zhang Weili. So the minute winner in this fight is absolutely Zhang Weili, unless Lemos lands an early knockout, which is definitely live to happen because I think she probably hits harder than anybody else in this division, pound for pound. And then also considering this is a, you know, a woman's fight, I think that Amanda Lemos hits the hardest, all things being considered relative to their weight class, of any other fighter on this card. So she's live for a finish, but I'm going to be overweight to the field on Zhang Weili, and then I'm going to be probably a little bit closer to the field on Amanda Lemos with her being projected for 20% ownership. But the big takeaway here, I expect Zhang Weili to win. She's someone I'm going to be prioritizing very heavily in Rainmakers contest as well, where you don't really have to consider anything like salary. Next fight here, Ian Garry against Neil Magny. And historically, I haven't been super high on Ian Garry relative to what the public thinks of him. He's kind of regarded as a future title contender, which I don't really see that in Ian Garry's future. He's definitely, as a lot of people have noticed, seems to be taking a lot out of the Conor McGregor playbook in terms of how he's promoting himself. He's even taking lines from Conor McGregor at press conferences and regurgitating them. And I was going to be picking against Ian Garry on this card, but that was when he was supposed to be fighting against Jeff Neal. Jeff Neal falls out with an injury. Neil Magny steps in, and now I have to lean towards the Ian Garry side. But now with that said, Ian Garry is $9,600 on DraftKings. He's projected to have 35% ownership. He's too expensive, in my opinion. He's also too popular. So I'm going to be undercutting the field on Ian Garry. But I can't really play that much of Neil Magny because he's looked really washed in his recent fight. So his last time out against Phil Rowe, he won the fight. I did bet on him in that spot. But Phil Rowe is not a super high-level opponent that Neil Magny was facing, and he barely won that fight. It was a split decision. It was the worst Magny's ever looked in his entire career. What he's going to try to do in this matchup to Ian Garry is control him by pushing him up against the cage and just maybe trying to take him down. I do think Ian Garry is suspect takedown defense, but if Magny wasn't able to take down Phil Rowe, it's hard for me to really project him to land takedowns against Ian Garry. So I'm going to pick Ian Garry to win, most likely by decision. Maybe he's able to hurt Neil Magny on the feet based on Magny just looking slower and also getting finished in some of his recent losses. Although with that said, the times he has been finished have generally been by submission, not knockout. So taking Ian Garry to win, and I'm going to pick him to win by decision. And if he does win by decision, it's hard for me to see him putting up some kind of optimal score on DraftKings at his price point. And I also think he's a little bit too expensive on the secondary market right now for Rainmaker. So I'm going to hope that he's not one of the highest scoring fighters on the card. Got a quick turnaround here for Damon Blackshear taking on Mario Bautista. As I'm sure you all remember, Damon Blackshear just a week ago fought, ended up landing a twister, only the third one in UFC history. And now, just 7 days later, he's going to be fighting against Mario Bautista. I'm not that concerned about the two consecutive weight cuts, especially because I thought Blackshear looked really good on the scale today. Actually, I thought he looked better on the scale than Mario Bautista did. So it's not something I'm going to factor in too much, especially because the fight against Jose Johnson last week, I mean, Blackshear took zero damage in that fight. He was just able to take him down at will, had his way with him on the ground, ends up submitting him in the twister. And I think that he could have wrestling and grappling success in this matchup against Mario Bautista, because if you look at some of the times that Bautista's fought against fighters who are willing to wrestle and grapple, he's gotten taken down, and he's not fought the best wrestler and grapplers. It's like Guido Canetti went 1-for-1 on takedowns against Mario Bautista. And Guido Canetti is over the age of 40. He is not competitive really in any of his fights at this point in his career. But still, he was able to take down Mario Bautista. So I look at that, and Damon Blackshear, who is only $7,100 on DraftKings, I think he's a really, really live underdog. I actually like betting on Blackshear in this spot. The best available line at the time that I'm recording is plus 184. So plus 184 in terms of like most books you guys are going to be having money on, though, like DraftKings has him at plus 180, FanDuel has him at plus 180. I think those are very playable lines on Blackshear, considering, like I said, I think Mario Bautista can be taken down. Jay Perrin took him down twice. Mentioned that Guido Canetti took him down. Jinsu Sun took down Mario Bautista twice. If these are the fighters that are able to take down Mario Bautista, I could definitely see Blackshear taking him down once or twice, maybe even more than that. And then something else to consider too, while there is that underlying storyline of, hey, Damon Blackshear just fought, he's having two consecutive weight cuts over the course of a week's time here, Mario Bautista has never had the best cardio, and he has slowed down and looked not great in the later stages of some of his fights. So I'm going to take Damon Blackshear to win, potentially by submission. And if he does win, I think it's going to be a good DraftKings score, because he's going to have to do with the wrestling grappling like he did last week. $7,100. He's one of my favorite value plays on the entire slate. You could take shots on him for Rainmakers, but it's hard to prioritize him. We do have so many fights that should score exceptionally well. And then obviously it's still risky because it's a fight that he's a big underdog in, when there's a lot of favorites like, you know, Aljamain Sterling and Zhang Weili that are much safer plays for Rainmakers purposes, where salary isn't a consideration. A fight that I'm really excited to watch in real life, but not as excited for DFS purposes, Marlon Vera against Pedro Munhoz. The reason being is that neither of them fight at insanely high outputs, and they're also mostly going to be striking on the feet in this fight. So 4.09 significant strikes landed per minute for Chito Vera, 5.3 for Pedro Munhoz. The other issue too with Chito is that he's a very slow starter, which is less problematic for him in five-round fights. He could punt the first or second round and then come on late and finish his opponents, like we saw against Dominic Cruz, like we saw against Rob Font. But in a three-round fight, if he's going to lose the first round, as he does basically against everybody, like even low-level competition, going back to when he first came into the UFC, against Andre Yule, we saw Chito Vera get outstruck 14-9 in the first round of that fight. Then you go and look at his fight against Song Yadong. against Song Yadong. And Song Yadong obviously now has been shown to be a high-level opponent. This one was a little bit closer in the first round. Vera actually did outland him 21-17. The fight against Sean O'Malley was a weird one because that was where we saw O'Malley get hurt in the first round. So Vera was just able to jump on him and finish him. In the fight against Jose Aldo, Aldo outlands him 19-16 in the first round. Then we look at the fight against Davy Grant. Davy Grant in the first round outlands Vera 41-30. So Vera has to rally back, win the second and third round of that fight. And then you go and look at his fight against Frankie Edgar. And in that fight, we saw Cheeto get a late finish, but still outlanded 35-18 in the first round by Frankie Edgar. You guys get the point here. Cheeto's a slow starter. In five-round fights, he could rally from behind. He could put up big scores. He could get finishes. He could put on a pace. He never gets hurt. He never gets tired. But in a three-round fight, if he's already going to be giving up on the first round like he does in most of his fights, and he's taking on Pedro Munhoz, who's super, super durable. Like, look at Pedro Munhoz and some of the fights that he has been in. Decision, decision, decision. A KO against Cody Garbrandt. We have never seen Pedro Munhoz knocked out in the UFC. It's never happened before. I don't expect Cheeto to be the first one to do it. It's hard to predict that to happen. So with that being the case, this fight that I expect to go two decision, they're not going to be wrestling and grappling. They're going to be striking. I favor Cheeto to win rounds two and rounds three. I favor Pedro Munhoz to win round one. But if there's not going to be a finish, it's harder for me to really expect this to score all that well. So fight that I'm excited to watch in real life, less so for DFS purposes. Chris Weidman against Brad Tavares. This is one that is difficult yet simple to break down because Chris Weidman is 39 years old. He's had an infinite amount of health issues just from the fact of last fight. He breaks his leg on the first strike of the entire fight. You never see this. Chris Weidman outlands Uriah Hall 1-0. The fight takes 17 seconds because on that one strike that Chris Weidman threw, his leg snaps in half. He gets TKO'd. Uriah Hall gets the win by doing nothing. He just stood there while Chris Weidman broke his own leg. And then Weidman's had numerous surgeries since then, which is what I was referring to with the health issues. It took him 2 years to get back. I didn't think we were ever going to see Weidman fight again. And even before that, he wins against Omari Akhmedov, but did not look great in that fight. He got taken down four times. He also was totally gassed in the third round. Had almost nothing left. Instantly knocked out by Dominic Reyes. Knocked out in the third round against Jacare Souza. That was a fight he was winning until that third round. Kelvin Gastelum, Chris Weidman wins, but he gets knocked down early in that fight as well. Yegor Mousasi knocks him out. Yoel Romero knocks him out. Luke Rockhold put a hellacious beating on him. Weidman gets hurt and finished in basically all of his fights dating back for the last 8 years. And now he's 39 years old, coming off a two-year layoff, coming back from a gruesome leg injury. Brad Tavares is not a finisher at all, but I just don't think that Chris Weidman has the durability to take shots from any professional fighter at this point in his career. So I just kind of feel like the inevitable outcome here is that Chris Weidman gets hurt and finished again by Brad Tavares. It's cool to see him come back because Chris Weidman at one point in time was one of my favorite fighters, but I expect him to get hurt again, which is unfortunate. So taking Brad Tavares to win by KO, and I think it's a pretty good contrarian play for this slate because we currently have the ownership on Tavares at mid-20%. So I think he's a pretty good pivot off of some other fighters in this range that are expected for more ownership. We're going to talk about some of them later, but like Mario Bautista, he's going to be more popular than Brad Tavares. I already said I'm picking Blackshear to win that fight. Natalia Silva, she's more popular than Brad Tavares. So fighters like this in this range, I'm going to pivot to Brad Tavares in some of my lineups. I also like him a lot for Rainmakers purposes. You know, if Chris Weidman of 10 years ago shows up, sure, he's going to probably be able to control Brad Tavares, land takedowns, and grind out a decision. But at this point, his career, I don't think that's very, very likely. So Brad Tavares, I think he's a good payoff option to be contrarian. Also like him for Rainmakers purposes. Gregory Rodriguez against Dennis Tallulin. This is a fight that I expect to finish inside the distance. Gregory Rodriguez is an incredibly talented fighter, but incredibly infuriating because he never fights with good game plans. For instance, he fights against Bruno Ferreira, and what does Gregory Rodriguez do? Stands and trades with a guy who has a massive wrestling and grappling advantage of, gets knocked out in the first round. And that's what we see a lot with Gregory Rodriguez is he can crack. He could hurt guys on the feet. He could finish people on the feet. But why not just lean on your wrestling and grappling? He's a very high-level black belt in jiu-jitsu. He also has really good judo. But instead of using that, he typically tends to stand and trade with guys until somebody gets hurt and finished. But what ends up happening a lot of times also is if Rodriguez gets hurt but is able to survive, he has to, you know, kind of panic and start to wrestle to recover. And then he starts to dominate guys because of how good his wrestling and his jiu-jitsu is. Don't even risk it with Dennis Tulin. Tulin has no ground game. If Gregory Rodriguez chooses to wrestle in this fight, he's going to very easily submit Tulin. If we look at some of the fights that Tulin has had, you know, his takedown defense looks good, but he hasn't really fought wrestlers or grapplers. You know, like Jamie Pickett isn't taking down anybody, really, for the most part. Jung Young Park, cool. He took down Dennis Tulin once and just instantly finishes him. If we see Rodriguez do the same, he's going to submit Tulin, zero doubt in my mind. You get concerned if he comes in with a bad game plan and just chooses to stand and trade with Tulin because that is his only path to victory. Tulin's as an underdog, but I'm going to go with Gregory Rodriguez to win. I think he gets a submission win. I hope he comes in with a good game plan. I think that last fight against Bruno Ferreira should be a learning lesson for Rodriguez. Don't stand and trade with guys who have big power and you have wrestling grappling advantages against him. Go take him down in the first round. Get yourself a submission. If he does that, he wins this fight easily and looks like the biggest favorite on the card. We have a couple of tough finale matchups here. Kurt Holaba against Austin Hubbard, then Brad Katona against Cody Gibson. I don't love either of them for DraftKings purposes, especially the Kurt Holaba Austin Hubbard fight. One of my least favorite fights on the entire card. Austin Hubbard is now, Kurt Holaba is now 37 years old. Austin Hubbard is now 31, turning 32 later in the year. This is a really weird season of tough, where they went with veterans against newcomers, and the veterans of the UFC just starched all of the newcomers. Now you've got these guys who were washed out of the UFC. The UFC had already declared a few years ago that they didn't want as part of the organization. They're bringing them back in. It was a very weird season. I didn't really like the setup of it. But anyway, we've seen both these guys in the UFC. Neither of them were all that successful, and neither of them were great DraftKings scorers either. In fact, Kurt Holaba didn't have a single win in the UFC. He fought 6 fights he had in his UFC career. By the way, he was also cut from the UFC in 2013, and all of that together led to 0 wins during his time in the organization. So now he's getting a third go because of this weird season of tough. And if you look at his stats, 4.51 significant strikes landed per minute, lands less than a takedown per 15 minutes. And then you've got somebody in Austin Hubbard who generally stands and trades on the feet, but keeps at a distance and doesn't really have super high output, landing 3.67 significant strikes per minute. So I think this fight takes place on the feet, and I don't think it's very likely to finish, therefore not one that I really want to be targeting for fantasy purposes. And then as for Katona against Cody Gibson, I know a handful of people have pointed this out. I know I saw Aaron Bronstetter was the first I saw to tweet about it. Cody Gibson, who's also going to be making his potential return to the UFC based on the way this tough season went and the concept behind it. His first ever fight in the UFC was 2014 against Aljamain Sterling. Sterling wins that fight by decision. Now his return potentially to the UFC comes on the undercard of a fight with Aljamain Sterling headlining. So that's kind of a fun storyline to this fight. But what I think we have to look at here is that these are two fighters with wrestling backgrounds. Neither of them throw all that high output on the feet. 3.33 significant strikes landed for Katona, 2.47 for Gibson. And then in the takedown department, we have seen Katona taken down at times with only a 47% takedown defense, but he got screwed on his first run of the UFC. In my opinion, this is a fighter in Brad Katona who always should have been in the UFC. He's very, very talented. Wins on the Ultimate Fighter. He is potentially the first ever multiple-time winner of TUF. So wins on the Ultimate Fighter, gets a contract, makes his UFC debut against Matthew Lopez, gets a win there, and then he makes his next fight. He fights against Merab. And he loses. Like, yeah, no shit. He lost to Merab. Merab ends up landing 5 of 9 takedowns against him, holds 8.5 minutes of control time. So, all right, Brad Katona loses that fight. Then he loses against Hunter Azure. And in my opinion, that fight was a robbery. Brad Katona won that fight. So he has a UFC run where, in my opinion, he should have been 2-1 with his only loss being to Merab. And then he gets cut, which to me is just a really, really bad deal that Katona got out of his first run in the UFC. I favor him to win over Cody Gibson. I'm just not sure how well this is going to score because Cody Gibson himself has a wrestling background, as does Brad Katona. So both of them being capable wrestlers, if they're going to negate each other in the wrestling, there could be some clinching up against the cage. And then we're just kind of left with two wrestlers striking at fairly low output. So I don't think this fight is going to score all that well. If I had to play one of them, I lean more towards Katona. I do have some cards of him in Rainmakers just because when the cards first came out, there were cards of Brad Katona, and I think people didn't really know what to do with it because he wasn't listed on the fight card because the TUF finale hadn't happened. So his cards were available for super cheap. So I bought them for basically like free. I got core cards of his for $1. I was getting rare cards for $5. So that kind of price, cool. I'll take a fighter who I expect to win that has no cost. But it's not one that, beyond just finding cards of his for nearly free, that I would want to be playing. He's my preferred play. I'm picking him to win, but it's not a fight with a mass amount of fantasy interest for me. Can't say the same about Andre Petrosky against Gerald GM3 Mearshart, because this fight, I do expect to score very well, because Mearshart fights almost always end inside the distance. Last time out against Joe Pyfer, he gets starched. Fights against Bruno Silva. Mearshart actually pretty good in that fight. Won the strike against Bruno Silva, pulled off an upset. Did go to decision against Christoph Jocko, but every Jocko fight goes to decision. Gets a sub against Dustin Stolfoots. Gets a sub against Makhmud Muradov. Gets a sub against Bartosz Fibinski. Gets KO'd by Khamzat Chimaev. Gets KO'd by Ian Heinisch. You get the deal here. Mearshart, almost all of his fights end inside the distance. And you have a fighter here in Andre Petrosky who looks very good in the first couple rounds of most of his fights. We saw that on The Ultimate Fighter when he was on that show, and I forget, was it 3 seasons ago? I thought that Petrosky was a real legitimate UFC prospect. And then what ends up happening on the show, we find out he only has like 1.5 minutes of cardio, a little bit problematic. Now in the UFC, I think we've seen his cardio much improved. He looked good in the fight against Wellington Turmon last time out, landed 8 takedowns, the fight went to decision. It's really good to see he was able to make it to the final bell and keep up a wrestling grappling pace throughout the fight. If the cardio issues rear their ugly head again, then maybe he gets tired in the late stage of Gerald Mearshart and Mearshart's able to wrap up a submission. But if he's able to fight to the final bell like he did against Turmon, I think Petrosky puts up a really big score in this fight. And he's projected for a good amount of ownership, actually 40% at $8,800. I totally get why, though. This is a fight I'm willing to play both sides of, though, because if Mearshart wins, he's only 12% owned at $7,400. The only fighters on the entire card that we're projecting for less ownership than Mearshart are Dennis Tallulin and Neil Magny. So with that being the case, I think that Mearshart is a good guy to get overweight to the field to, because if he wins at $7,400, he's probably going to put up a score that lands him in the optimal lineup. So a really good fight to target between Petrosky and Mearshart, but I'm picking Petrosky to win. And for Rainmaker's purposes as well, I think it makes a lot of sense to get exposure to Petrosky. Andrea Lee against Natalia Silva. This is another fight that I don't have a massive amount of interest in. Natalia Silva, I picked to win, but she is super, super expensive at $9,400. She's also going to be popular. Got her projected right around 30% ownership. So I don't like the price tag, nor do I like the ownership on Natalia Silva. She is so far landing strikes at a very, very high output in the UFC, 5.47 significant strikes landed per minute. But this is a really wide line, and I do think Andrea Lee could keep this fight competitive, because if you look at their striking numbers, pretty similar. 5.13 significant strikes landed per minute for Andrea Lee. The one difference here, though, Natalia Silva does not get hit nearly as often. And then also, we do see Andrea Lee is more aggressive in the wrestling, lands 2.04 takedowns per 15 minutes, but it's been proven to be really difficult to take down Natalia Silva, at least to this point in her UFC career, with a 92% takedown defense. So I'm going to pick Natalia Silva to win, but not a fight that I really want to play all that much of for DraftKings purposes, because I think it goes to decision, and there's a lot of fights that are going to score well and finish early, and this is not one of those. The first fight on the card, though, is a fight that I think could finish pretty early, and Marina Moroz, who's only projected for ownership in the teens, is one of my favorite underdog plays on the slate, especially when you consider that Karina Silva is projected to be the most popular mid-range play on the entire slate in our ownership projections. We have Silva projected for north of 30% ownership, making her, like I said, the most popular mid-range play at $8,300. So I think there's a lot of leverage to be had by playing Marina Moroz. Also, these two fought each other many years ago in 2015. Moroz ended up winning that fight by submission. And what we've seen from Silva in a lot of her fights is that while she finishes all of her wins, if she wins, she's getting early finishes, she's putting up big scores. But if she doesn't get that finish in like the first round, early second round, she gasses out and loses and gets finished herself. And I think that's what could happen here, especially because Marina Moroz, super durable. We never see Moroz get finished. Moroz's losses in the UFC, decision against Valerie Letourneau, decision loss to Carla Esparza, decision loss to Angela Lee, decision loss last time out to Jennifer Maia. These are all decisions that she loses. I don't really think it's all that likely that Silva gets a finish in this spot, and that generally is her win condition. She has to get finishes to win because or else she doesn't have the cardio to keep fighting, and she also doesn't really fight at the highest output in a lot of her fights. She only lands 2.39 significant strikes per minute. Yes, she lands 2.24 takedowns per 15 minutes, and Moreau's only has a 47% takedown defense, so I'm not going to totally write off Silva, but ownership being considered, I'm going to lean towards Moreau's. I also have a bet on her on this fight. I bet her at plus 130 to win. So a couple of bets that I like on underdogs. I mentioned that I like Damon Blackshear, and then I also like Marina Moreau's as an underdog, so plus money on both of them. So that's a walkthrough of all of the individual fights. Now let's go and look at some of the Rainmaker stuff. I'll open up a pack or two here, and then I will go and build lineups. Let's see. Well, I got an Elite in the first pack, so I'll save the Elite for last. If it's something good, why am I going to open another pack here? We're just running good. Just go ahead and... all right, Mearshart, who I don't hate as an underdog. Brad Tavares, who I like as a favorite. Karina Silva, who I'm picking against her, but I understand that there's fantasy upside there. Chris Weidman, don't like him. Let's give me a good Elite. Give me a good Elite here. Kurt Oliva, not a great Elite. Not a great Elite, but still, it's an Elite. It's a playable card. All right, I'll open one more pack. And then we'll build out some lineups. See if I get anything. Oh, another. All right, I'm running very good on packs here. Cody Garbrandt. So Garbrandt isn't on the card. Obviously, he pulled out, but you can burn him and turn him into a Damon Blackshear. Got Ian Garry. That's not bad. Chito Vera. There's an Amanda Lemos. And, all right, Natalia Da Silva as an Elite. So I don't love her necessarily for this card relative to classic DraftKings contest at $9,400. But obviously, I'm going to play her Elite when she's a massive favorite. So pretty safe fighter to be getting exposure to there. All right, I ran pretty good on packs there. Let's build out some lineups. Probably going to have to check my location here. I'll build an Elite lineup. I still have a ton of Aljamain Sterling cards from the last fight that he had against Henry Cejudo. One thing that's been good to me about buying the yearly cards is now we're at a point in the season where I just have cards of fighters that I've been holding on to for a while and that I've already used this year. So that's one advantage to getting some of the yearly cards early on in the year as opposed to just getting the individual UFC event cards. But Sterling, going to actually a lot of these Sterlings I had dating back to even last year when the Heatwave set came out. So I'm going to play Sterling in the captain here. My overall favorite play on the slate. Gonna have to play one more Elite fighter. I'll just plug in the Natalia Silva I just opened. And now two rares to fill it out. I'll put a Zhang Wai Li in here. Put in a Gregory Rodriguez. And I do have a legendary Andrea Lee, which I'm not super keen to play. If nobody buys it, I list it for sale in the secondary market, then I'll just use it. But I don't really love her for this fight. All right, let's see. At least not for Rainmaker's purposes or for classic contests all that much. I'll throw a Brad Tavares in here as well. So this is a pretty safe lineup. A lot of big favorites, but I think all of them have a lot of finishing equity other than Natalia Silva. But like Sterling, I think should put up a big score and a win. Zhang Wai Li should put up a big score and a win. Brad Tavares thing is live for a knockout. And Gregory Rodriguez, I also think, should be able to submit Dennis Tallulah. So let's go and submit this lineup after saying that I think that Gregory Rodriguez should win by submission. And that is going to do it for me. Guys, thank you very much for watching. If you've not done it yet, like the video. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you want to sign for any of the packages over at stochastic.com, if you want access to the ownership projections that I was referencing over the course of the show, sign up using the link below. 50% any package you sign up for the first time. Good luck with this week's card. Hope we all win some money. And I'll see you guys back here next week. I believe it is the return of Max Holloway against the Korean Zombie taking place at like 3 a.m. my time or something. But still, there's the UFC slate, so I'll be excited to break it down. See you guys then.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Did you miss your deadline to renew your Medicaid coverage? You can still send your completed annual review form to Healthy Connections Medicaid. You may be assigned to another health plan, but you can ask to come back to First Choice within 60 days of renewed Medicaid eligibility. It's your family. It's your choice. First Choice is the right choice. Renew and choose us. Visit selecthealthofsc.com/renew to learn more.